Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. A week later than normal, most apologies for that. This is episode 58. As always, I am joined by my colleague in the United States, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Well, for those listening at home, apologies if the voice is a little raw and rusty. It's peak broadcasting season with the sport crossover and collegiate athletics, but combining that and it's freakishly cold here in the Northeast, I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. You mentioned collegiate sport there. We definitely need to, at a future episode, have a chat about the NCAA tournament. Obviously, that is going on and is reaching the latter stages. So we definitely need to get your input on that one in the coming weeks. But we're going to keep this one. Well, we say we're going to keep it a little shorter. We tend to plan that quite often. Then it kind of rumbles on a little bit longer than planned. But let's dive straight in, mate. And there's been some big talking points in terms of head coach changes. And there were none bigger than the news that came out last week that Laura Harvey was stepping away from her role as Seattle Reign head coach and general manager, and the FC Kansas City head coach Vlatko Andonovski would be taking her place. Now, credit to Richard Farley of 442 USA. He put an article out probably the day before that Laura Harvey would be leaving, and it hasn't been nothing confirmed yet, but his belief is that Laura is likely to be taking up a role within US soccer. I mean, regardless of where Laura ends up, she's obviously been linked with the England job as well. Mo Marlin is obviously interim head coach since Mark Sampson's departure. Wherever Laura ends up, JJ, that organization is going to be very, very fortunate, aren't they? And it is a huge loss to this Seattle Reign. We'll talk about the gain of Vlatko in a minute, but what Laura Harvey has done for that organization since the inception of the NWSL is nothing short of superb, is it?
I mean, when you look at season one, and they pretty much, outside of a late run in that first season, were the worst team in the league, but they just kept building and getting the group of players that they want to not only buy into her system, but to buy into the organization as well. And I mean, that Seattle Reign team, 14, 15, I think those are probably some of the most fun teams to watch that I can really remember in a long period of time, because they played good football, they played for each other, and they played for the coach. And, you know, when you have a person like Laura Harvey who, not only her ability to get the best out of players, but can also manage some players that are a little bit, let's face it, larger than life. There are some key, through the years, there have been some big players that have come through that Reign franchise. And she has kept everything running smoothly, as at least from our vantage point, as smoothly as possible. And you say it's a big loss for the Seattle Reign. I think by extension, it's a big loss for the National Women's Soccer League, because I think a lot of people that weren't within, you know, watching the league and following on a week-to-week basis but knew something about it, usually the first thing you think about was Laura Harvey and the work that she did up with the Seattle Reign.
And combining the two roles as well, that's not easy, is it? Head coach and GM. We saw Randy Waldrum try to combine the two roles in Houston and didn't quite work as successfully for him. I think credit to Laura in that sense, because she's not just running things on the field. There's a lot of things that you have to focus on off of the field as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I mean, general manager, it's not just signing the players. It's literally, I mean, okay, so it depends on the sport, depends on how the club operates, but it can range from finding the players housing to organizing trips on the road to making sure sponsors are lined up to making sure that players go to their appearances. There could be many layers of what a general manager could do, and this ranges on the sport and the level of, you know, the type of league and how established it is. I mean, I've seen general managers in some sports, lower levels, mind you, Karen, but in some sports that literally they're the ones opening up the facility, running the practices, at games, they're the ones that are greeting all the fans before they leave and making sure that the autographs are signed after. And, oh, by the way, they're cleaning up and locking the facility on the way out. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And I think Laura, as we all know, she's class. She did it with a sense of, you know, pride in how she went about her job, but really also to set the groundwork really for how coaches should operate in the NWSL and also by extension with a lot of club teams.
Would we say that we've seen some incredible teams since the league launched in 2013, but you mentioned that Reign team of 2014, 2015 that got to two championship finals. Is that the best franchise that we've seen yet to win an NWSL title?
Yet to win a title, absolutely. I mean, I still think the 15 season, the rosters of Seattle and FC Kansas City, I mean, those two teams, you literally throw them up against any other team in the world, and I would be picking those two teams to win 90 times out of 100. That's just how good they were, and I think just the way that they played the game, they did it. I know it's a cliche, but they did it the right way, and it was appealing to the eye. It was just fun to watch, quite frankly. And yeah, I mean, you know, now going forward here, we know that Laura's had some moments with the U.S. program in the past. She did with Richard Farley reporting. I think we knew this a couple of years ago as well. She worked with some of the youth setup. I believe took a U23 team over to one of the international tournaments. I believe La Manga was the one that she took them to. And, you know, she was responsible for, you know, really helping some young players transition over, not only internationally, but to the club club level. And I think she is going to do the exact same thing and do it as well in whatever role that she does with the national team.
If she is indeed to go into that US system, I have two questions for you. Number one, do we believe that US soccer are potentially lining her up as the next head coach of the US Women's National Team as and when Jill Ellis's reign comes to an end? And number two, if that is the case, how much of a loss is this potentially for the England national team, who, for me, I've said it very publicly, should have probably approached Laura as soon as that job became available. They have gone for the application process. I believe that the interview process is due to take place the first week of December. You know, I understand it's the fairest way to do it, but in my head, if you know who the person is that you want to get, you go out and get that person. And clearly, England haven't done that if Laura is going to go into the US soccer system. Or it may well be, we don't know, maybe they have done and she's decided that actually she wants to stay in US soccer. But those two questions I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on, mate.
Well, I think the second one first, I think you answered it perfectly. It's already a loss for England because of the fact that they didn't jump on the opportunity when presented. Yes, you need to obviously interview more than one candidate for any job. I mean, that's not fair hiring practices, right? But that's kind of more of a business end. But you look at it with England, yeah, you know, she knows the system already. I mean, let's face it, back in her Arsenal days, she's probably coached up a fair few of the players that are in the system as it is, so it really wouldn't be much of a change from you know, years ago. But to answer the first question, that's a big fat question mark. I mean, I said it publicly, and I, you know, have since not taken it back per se, but obviously it has worked out in Jill Ellis that she's, you know, she did what she was supposed to do. She came in and won the World Cup in 2015. I didn't think that she was the right person for the job. I truly believe that Tom Sormani should have been given time to, you know, really make his footprint on the team and get the players and the system that he wants. He wasn't afforded that because they wanted to win. They, as in that team that was leading up to the 15 cycle. So now we look to 2019. I don't think qualification should be much of an issue, but let's look at how world football has been on the men's side, where literally we've been thrown for a loop left, right, and center with big countries not qualifying. So that's not a given. But you look at the track record of how the U.S. have gone about their business against good opposition. It hasn't been great, albeit friendlies, but it still has not been great. So to maybe groom her to be the next head coach in Laura Harvey, possibly. But then again, I don't even know how long Jill Ellis could be lasting. She could be lasting for another couple more cycles. We don't know. But yeah, that's going to be one of those time will tell type answers.
Yeah, I think very diplomatic there, mate. I have said it quite publicly. I think if Laura Harvey wasn't going to take the England coach job, I do genuinely think that she's probably going to be at some point in the future the head coach of the US women's national team. But we'll have to wait and see. Very highly thought of in Seattle. I know that there were some nice statements from Bill Predmore, and we saw a lot of players tweet in her direction how grateful they were for, you know, her time at the club. And I'm sure she'll be greatly missed. But we mentioned two championship finals, two defeats to FC Kansas City. I guess the way that Seattle have approached it, if you can't beat the guy that's beaten you, get him on board yourself. They've hired Vlatko Andonovski. Again, Richard Farley had reported that his future seemed to be away from the club before it was announced that he would be joining Seattle. About as good an appointment as you can get after losing such a highly respected coach in Laura Harvey, isn't it, JJ? Vlatko Andonovski, very much on that same level as Laura in terms of respect and reputation in the NWSL.
I mean, we found out about it towards the back end of this past season, that with some issues that were going on with FC Kansas City, a lot of those players stayed because of the respect and admiration that they have for their head coach. I mean, this is a guy, let's remember, in 2013, when the coaches were being named for the organizations, everybody was scratching their heads and wondering, who the heck is Vlatko Andonovski? I mean, let's face it, it's not to say that his background wasn't good. It's just one that not a lot of people knew about. In 5 years, I think he has put himself on the map in one of the better club coaches, not only domestically but internationally, because of the way that his team plays. I know the results haven't shown over the past couple of years, but they've also had some bad injuries, some players that retire. I mean, let's face it, I don't think that the team has ever recovered that Lauren Holiday has retired. I mean, she's world-class and literally was the engine that could in that midfield. But now moving to Seattle, where he plays not the exact same style or coaches the exact same style that Laura Harvey does, but a lot of very similar traits. And that final in 15 between those two sides, it was literally one slip up in the back by Ellie Reed, one great delivery. I believe it was Heather O'Reilly on the near side, and then it was finished off, and that was the difference in that match. But it was pretty even up until that point because the two teams just straight canceled each other out. So, yeah, I think that's about as ideal of a move that you can ask for. And I would not be surprised if a fair few players from Kansas City look to try and jump ship and go to Seattle as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's a question about that. I'm almost certain that some of them will look to follow him to Seattle again. A well-respected organization. I guess one thing we didn't mention about Laura Harvey, JJ, and to be honest with you, we could probably do a whole show on this issue. With her resignation, there are now no female head coaches in the NWSL. A lot of conversation about that on social media, some articles that have been posted as well. Not a great look for the league, is it? They need to try and address that issue. But I guess the question is, where do they get those coaches from? How many females are applying? I'd be really interested to know how the clubs are looking at candidates, because those three jobs that I see that are available, you've got FCKC, Sky Blue FC, Houston Dash. For some bizarre reason, I don't see many females being linked with those roles at the moment.
You know, it's interesting because some people have brought up, and it's not so much of a known quantity elsewhere internationally, but here, US side, coaches that are in college roles, for the most part, Kieran, they would rather stay there. I mean, you know, you look at available coaches. Obviously, you're always going to talk about those who have had success at the collegiate level, because those are very, for the most part, secure jobs. They're pretty well-paid jobs. Not that I know what the comparison is between a NWSL and an NCAA Division I job. But there's a bit of security there. There are differences that you have, obviously, for college. You're recruiting for 4 years as opposed to a professional coach, which is, you know, recruiting for transfer fees and whatnot. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not one to believe that it's not because of the fact that female coaches don't want to take the jobs. I just think that NCAA jobs right now, or very, very good club jobs right now at the youth level are the ones that are a little more desired at the moment, just purely because of the fact that you look back to the track record in U.S. women's professional club soccer. Hasn't been a great one just because of stability in the leagues. Now, you're six coming up in the NWSL, which is nearly double the last two professional leagues. You might start to see a little bit, but I don't think it's so much the coaches that don't want to. I think it's just they're satisfied right now with where they are.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. I just wonder how much encouragement there is for players after they retire to go into coaching. That would be a question that I'd have. I look at the number of players that, and I think we've probably discussed it before, the number of players that are high profile, that come out of the national team, who go into the media and don't go into coaching. That's another thing that I believe, you know, should be looked at. I'm not saying that players shouldn't go into the media. Believe me, the ones that are in there are very, very good at what they do. But I just wonder where do those players end up? Because the opportunities are few and far between. So I just wonder where a lot of these female players are ending up. But it'd be nice to see a few more in the league. Not as a token gesture. I think you hire the best people, but there are some fantastic female coaches out there all across Europe, all across the world. Let's see some more of them in the NWSL. But I think the only other coaching situation that I wanted to discuss very briefly, JJ, was, and we discussed it shortly before he was relieved of his duties, and that was Pedro Losa. 3-year stay at Arsenal Women, won an FA Cup, won a Continental Cup, but it was announced that he had departed the club after a 1-1 draw at home to Bristol City in the WSL. Didn't come as a surprise, but a shame nonetheless, because highly thought of amongst, I think, quite a lot of people in the women's game. I know very highly thought of in the US. I think he just got to a point where, and it sounds damning, I know, and I don't mean it to come across this way, we'd kind of run out of ideas, didn't know how to get out the best out of a very, very talented squad. And it didn't really come as a surprise, did it, that he'd been relieved of his duties?
Yeah, agreed. And I think at the end of the day, look, this is a results business. And when you're afforded that deep of a player pool that he had, I mean, internationals left, right, and center, players that are at the peak or not even close to what their peak could be. Yeah, you need better. And I think, you know, for a club that knows that the window is running out to get back into Champions League, because a lot of other clubs in England are just adding to what they already have and making, you know, that gap between the top couple of teams and everybody else a bit more further, that makes it difficult. So you have to, not to say cut losses, but unfortunately, if it doesn't work, you have to try another route. And it's unfortunate because what my understanding is, Pedro is a very good man, good person, got on well with the media. But it's at the end of the day, like I said, it's a business and the results just weren't coming.
Yeah, it gets on very well with the media. I know that some fans had lost faith in him. And I hate to say it as well, I think there are players possibly that are not with the club anymore who I don't think bought into his methods or the way that he approached things. And I think that may have crept into this team as well. I don't know that for certain. I've certainly not been told that. But yeah, it is a shame, because from a personal perspective, I've always had a very good relationship with Pedro. Arsenal is one of the teams that I get to see most because I live in London. And I thought it was a shame that he lost his job, but it came as no surprise. And I think it was the right decision for Arsenal to approach a different direction. They have gone with Australian coach Joe Montemurro as his replacement, managed Melbourne City in their inaugural season in the Australian W League. They went undefeated and won the competition in his first season. I think he then moved over to the men's team as an assistant coach. I have to be honest, I don't know an awful lot about Joe Montemurro, but speaking to some of the people who are based down in Australia, I had a very, very brief chat with Jess Fishlock as well. Very highly thought of. It'll be interesting to see how he does at Arsenal, won't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you look at the track record again. Victory with a very star-laden group. I mean, that team, if there ever was as close to an Invincibles, that was just about it. I think they only allowed in that one season maybe a goal or two. Hardly really fought against by other teams. So yeah, you move him into an organization right now that has a very similar star power stature, but the job and the description is a little bit different. Get into Champions League. I don't think there's anything less that can be called a successful season because they need to get back there. So yeah, you know, good luck for him. Hopefully he can, not to say turn things around, but start to get the results that were going by the wayside in the first couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah, without question. I'm sure it'll be an interesting role for him. He's got plenty of talent to work with. That Arsenal team has been underachieving for probably a little bit too long now, so it'll be interesting to see how he approaches it and how he sets them up, because I think that was the biggest problem for Pedro Losa. I saw different formations, different personnel in different positions, and never really any consistency with the way that he set the team up, and I think that was probably his biggest downfall. But wish him well, wish Joe Montemurro well, be interested to see how he settles in. We'll have a quick break, JJ, and when we come back, we're going to have a little chat about the UEFA Women's Champions League last 16 first legs.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So, welcome back. JJ, we spoke about the Champions League on a recent podcast with the round of 32. The last week we've had the round of 16 first legs. This show is going to come out the day before the second legs take place. So, unfortunately, some people will be listening to this after the completion of the ties. So, we do apologise. We aim to get these out a little bit earlier than we have done this time round. Not many surprises were there, mate, when you look at the scores. I was actually at Chelsea against Rosengard. We'll be able to hear from Emma Hayes and Ramona Backman to get their views on that one. Maybe we should start with that one. It was 3-0 to Chelsea. Now, I saw Chelsea against Rosengard earlier in the season. In fact, it was before the spring series. It was a friendly match and it finished 2-2. Very different Rosengard team then to the one that played last week. That team had the likes of Marta and Lika Martins in the team, Lotte Schelin another one. None of them are involved at the moment. Lotte Schelin hasn't played since the Euros, and obviously Marta and Lika Martins have moved on to pastures new. I have to be honest, mate, Chelsea were very, very worthy winners. Other than a 15-minute spell in the second half, Rosengard really didn't offer very much, and I think it's showing at the moment how strong Chelsea are. Emma Hayes has built a very, very competent squad there, and I've spoken very highly of them a number of times, but they looked excellent against Rosengard, and I don't see them slipping up in the second leg, mate.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, when you build up a 3-0 advantage at home, and as you say, for probably 75% of the match, they were dictating the tempo and really keeping Rosengard on kind of their back heels. That's tough. And I mean, yeah, you look at the visiting side in the roster, when you take out those names that you mentioned, not to say that that is a weakened side, but boy, if you had the likes of Marta, Lika Martin still in there, I think that this first leg probably looks a little different on paper, but unfortunately that's how business works. And Chelsea, yeah, you said it right, this is a deep team. I mean, pretty much the second unit, if you will, or the players coming off the bench and the reserves beyond that could probably beat two-thirds of the teams in the WSL because of the fact that this is a team that they're not only fighting for spots, they're pushing each other to try and get the best out of it day in and day out. And when you have a player like Kaz Kearney getting, what, a toss on the field at some point, Gemma Davison not even starting in this match, Aaron Cuthbert, who's been really good over the past couple of months, both for club and for country, I mean, that's a tough team just to break into.
Yeah, without question, they were really, really excellent. And as you say, they have options off the bench pretty much week in, week out. They can rotate. Crystal Dunn started games. Crystal Dunn's been on the bench. Ramona Backman started games. Ramona Backman's been on the bench. It really is a really, really strong squad. And I said it publicly on social media. I watched Chelsea a few times this season, and I genuinely think that they are the best WSL side that I have seen since the league started in 2011. That is stronger than the 2011 and 2012 winning Arsenal team, stronger than Man City's team that won, you know, a double last year and also added the FA Cup this year. They look almost unbeatable. They did drop a couple of points in the WSL at the weekend against Reading. There was an own goal in injury time from Magdalena Eriksson, which was unfortunate, but other than that, they've looked pretty invincible this season, and I don't see them slipping up in that second leg. Got some audio from Emma Hayes and Ramona Backerman. Obviously, Ramona Backerman played for Rosengard. She scored in that game against her old club. So you can hear from both of them here. We'll play Emma Hayes first, followed by Ramona Backerman.
Well, I think I can be more confident than I was prior to the game. It's still half time, but 3-0, we scored again in another game. I feel confident that we're going to score in every game we play in. And if we do that away from home, then I think it will be really difficult for them to get back into the tie.
And equally, you were very impressive defensively today as a unit.
It's the minimum standard goal for us. You know, goals are the bonus. Clean sheets are what we pride ourselves on, and you can see that. I think it was a period, 15 minutes in the second half, where they had a lot of set pieces, but we dealt with it. But I thought it was some wonderful play from us. We had 20 shots in the first half, and I was disappointed we came in 1-0 at half time, but credit to Musovic, because she kept them in the game. But we kept our patience, and I think we showed real composure on all three finishes tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the quality of the finishing and a lot of the technical play in and around the box must have really impressed you.
An English team playing technically well. There's,
we're making
huge progress. But we play as we train, and that to me looked like a training performance from my team tonight. And that I expect that level of intensity in everyday training. So for us, we're prepared for European opponents. I've made it very clear that to progress in this competition, I've had to have a big squad, because I need to be able to train with that intensity. And we're proving that with the squad that we have, yes, I have to keep my dressing room happy, but that we can now progress to the latter stages as a result of it.
I mean, you saw that with a performance someone like Crystal Dunn, who we haven't always seen starting, but she was fantastic today.
Yeah, she's a little terrier, she is. She'll go up and down all day. She's a winner, as we know. Tenacious in her performance, did a good job both sides of the ball, and, you know, fully prepared for what I was asking of her. She's getting back to full fitness. She took a bit of time to do that, and I think justified her selection in the side tonight.
Earlier in the year, Emma, I was at the 2-2 that you had with Rosengard. Granted, different personnel, but is this a sign of how far your club has come, that you've come away with a 3-0 today against the same club?
Oh, you imagine 2 years ago this wouldn't have been a result that was thinkable for us. I mean, we've tried to emulate clubs like Rosengard in terms of them being stalwarts in European competition. You know, the fact that we're coming into this game and they call themselves the underdog just shows you how far the game is going and growing in England. And I think it's a real credit to the investment the club's put into what we're doing, but the league as a whole, because it's preparing us even better now we're in a winter season to compete against the best teams, including Rosengard.
You said you were the underdogs going into this leg, certainly would be the favourites going to the next one. Would it be alright kind of coping with that transition?
Yeah, alright then, fine. I won't play it down next game again. I expect at 3-0 up we will be favourites. But it's something the dressing room can live with. I know that. Every day they go in, they expect to be Europe's best. We have huge ambitions this year. And I think if we don't progress at this stage, then it would be an absolute disaster. But I'm a bit of a tyrant, so their concentration levels will be high, because we've got a game to concentrate on Sunday with a team that are fast proving themselves to be contenders for the Women's Super League. So we've got to take care of that first before we even think about Rosengard.
And even if you want to dampen it down, though, the fact you've knocked out Bayern, you've beaten Rosengard 3-0, everyone else in Europe's now going to be looking at Chelsea and thinking, we don't want to play them.
Good. I've waited a long time to get to that point. But, you know, we haven't received an easy draw, unlike, you know, our other English counterpart in this country. And I think we will be better prepared as a result of that. We've had a lot of setbacks, a lot of failures. And I think that those experiences are putting us in a position we're in right now.
Your comments on the match?
Yeah, well, I think we had a great performance, especially the first half was amazing. A lot of chances, we should have scored more. Second half, we lost it a little bit, especially the first 20 minutes, but got back into it and deserved the win.
And your goal, of course, on your 50th European game, you got a goal against your old club, and it was really a decisive goal, wasn't it? Because that was the one dodgy moment for Chelsea, went at 1-0.
Yeah, it was for me, it was nice to score. I haven't scored for a while. I've had some good performances, had some assists, but as a forward, it's always nice to get a goal.
How much are you enjoying the way Chelsea are playing at the moment? you, Fran, the other attacking players?
I really enjoy it a lot. I think we find each other really, really good. And yeah, it's all about like going on the pitch and having fun, and that's what we are doing. We're playing, we enjoy playing, and that's why our performance are so good at the moment.
You've been part of a team that's won this competition before. Do you get the same sort of feeling now that Chelsea are a team that are capable of winning this competition?
I'm confident about that. We have the quality to win it, but it's still a really far way to go. And I think for us, it's important to just keep being confident, but not arrogant. Take game for game, and not thinking too far ahead.
You've played some really strong sides, Ramona, in Germany, in Sweden. How good is this Chelsea side compared to some of the other clubs you've played at?
This Chelsea team right now is really, really good. It's similar to Wolfsburg. I think the facilities and everything we have here is even better than it was in Wolfsburg. So we've got everything to succeed here.
Look at the options that you had on the bench today as well. How much is that pushing you, knowing that if you have an off day or you have a bad game, then there's likely going to be a player that comes in to take your place? How much is that pushing you?
Well, I think it's just we have done really, really well. Like I think that's one of our strengths, that we have got this depth in our squad. We can like switch from game to game. We can put in players from the bench, and that's what's going to make us winning titles.
The club has won league title, it's won an FA Cup, it's never been to a European quarterfinal. How much are the players conscious of that, and how much do you really want that?
We have all said that we want to really go very far in this competition. We're all confident about that. We have the qualities to win it, and that's what we go for.
You're looking forward to going back to Malmo as well? Maybe even colder than it is here today, I don't know, but you're looking forward to that return?
I do look forward. It's going to be very emotional for me. It feels a bit like coming home, because I've had four really, really good years there. I didn't leave the club because I didn't like it, just to make some new experiences. So really looking forward to go back.
Was a 3-0 margin sort of better than you expected, you would say?
Well, yeah, it was. I knew Rosengård is a good team, and it's not easy to beat them. And I think just our performance today was really good, but well deserved.
So many thanks there to Emma Hayes and Ramona Backman. JJ, having a look at some of the other scores. Some of them are over. It would look like Wolfsburg were being held by Fiorentina. It was 0-0 at half time. Then they turned on the style, 1-4-0 in the second half. Barcelona are 6-0 up on Gintra, that they won away, the Lithuanian side. Man City, you actually spoke about Claire Emsley before we came onto air, and she scored in that game away at LSK Kvina. And I have to be honest, I was expecting a little more from LSK, because they did really well to knock Bromby out in the previous round. 5-0 to Manchester City. Now, I know that you've seen a little bit of Claire Emsley in the WSL games that have been streamed as well. You've been impressed by her, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's time and place really for every player to try and find some form in the middle of the season, but her form right now is just world class. I mean, some of the goals that she is scoring, they're not just, you know, good finishes in the box. They're turning fires from 25, 30 out. They're beating keepers all ends up. Her pace out wide is something that really makes her special as well. And I think, you know, the bar for her is really high, and I think she's only starting to scratch that surface right now, just a youngster too. So I think, you know, that City team, we talked about with Chelsea how deep they are. I think a couple of moves from this, you know, past off season, from the spring series to this fall, or moves at least that other teams have made, and City not doing so much, it kind of had that little bit of a gap. But I think if she continues to try and push that rest of the team, they look convincing on this weekend as well. They bagged, what, I think 4 against Bristol City. Looked very good doing so. So, yeah, I think, you know, she's going to be one of the main catalysts, not only for this campaign, but potentially for a few years to come.
Yeah, agreed. She was a player that I picked out for an article that I wrote earlier in the season, and I think she is definitely a player that is going to grow in that Manchester City team. As I say, it was a really good result. LSK won the Norwegian top serien this season. As I said, they knocked out Bromby in the last 16. So for City to go there and win 5-0, I'm actually going to the second leg, which is taking place this Thursday. So I'll be interested to see how LSK line up in that one, because it's a big ask. Well, I say it's a big ask. There's no way they're sticking five past Man City in Manchester. I hate to say it, but that tie is pretty much over. Looking at some of the other scores, mate, 7-0 for Lyon in Kazakhstan against Kazakhstan. Ada Hegerberg scored four in that one, showing that she is continuing her fine form. Brescia against Montpellier, 3-2 to Montpellier away from home. That one could be interesting, because we know that if Brescia turn up, they can be decent, can't they? And I think that one is not necessarily over, despite the fact Montpellier won away from home.
No, Brescia really woke up Montpellier's eyes early on. Girelli got herself a pair of goals, right, both of them coming, well, one very early on, I think, like 8-9 minutes in, and then the second one got a few before halftime, needed a Janis Kaiman goal just to level things going into the locker room. Then Sembren was able to put the winner away. But yeah, I think that one, there's two, Kieran, that there are not over yet. I think Montpellier at home should probably get the job done. But as you say, if they turn up Brescia, they kind of put in a similar, it's going to be a bit back to the wall. They only produced a half dozen shots throughout that match, but they finished. And I think that's the key in it. Anytime in a knockout tournament, or this being pretty much a one-off at this stage in the second leg, you finish your chances, the other team is wasteful. That's going to come back to hurt the team that has the more of them. So, you know, keep an eye on that one. The other one that's actually a little more interesting for me, you haven't mentioned it yet, Sparta Praha 1-1 against Linköping. And that was a match actually that was very, very even from start to finish. And shout out to former Boston Breaker Kylie Strom getting the opener for Praha just after halftime, and Linköping got one a few minutes afterwards. But yeah, you know, I think that one definitely still something to play for. Obviously, it's going to be second leg in Sweden. That's going to be a tough ask from Praha to get something out of it. But yeah, I think those are the two matches that we should probably keep a little bit more of an eye on, because there could be something brewing out of it.
Yeah, and their Czech neighbours, Slavia Praha, they won 2-1. In Iceland against Stjarnan, and obviously 2-1, you never know what might happen in the second leg, but you're right, I think the others pretty much over and done with. You wouldn't expect Gintra to go to Barcelona and do very much. The same with Kazakhstan. I apologise if that sounds disrespectful. You just have to say it as it is sometimes. There are ties that after the first leg, unfortunately, are pretty much done and dusted. I want to move on very, very briefly, JJ, before we finish up with the US national team against Canada doubleheader. You reminded me about the FAWSL, and we're not going to have a look at results. We haven't done a show for a little while, so there'd be too much to cover off. We'll cover the FAWSL in the next episode and get some players on. The FAWSL application deadline for the newly formatted league for next season, where there will be a WSL top tier. We don't know what even know what it's going to be branded as. It might even change name. It's going to be a professional league for up to 14 teams. We've spoken about it on the show already. We are starting to find out very slowly teams that have decided to apply for that top tier division and which teams have decided against it. There is a very strict criteria that's been set out by the FA that clubs need to meet if they are going to try and get into that top tier. Now, finance plays a big part in it. Full-time professionals being in that league plays a part in it. The number of hours that players get on the training field plays a part in it. Attendances, having a general manager, having a marketing officer all plays a part in it. There are some clubs that you expect to go for that top tier, or certainly will have expected to go for that top tier. And there are some clubs that you maybe think it's probably going to be a little bit too far-fetched. One of those clubs that you kind of think would be too far-fetched is Yeovil. Yeovil have a men's team that plays in the lower divisions of English football, the third or fourth tier. They have punched above their weight for so long. Coach Jamie Sherwood, good friend of the show, good friend of mine, done a tremendous job getting them into WSL 1. They are getting a bit of a reality check at the moment in that division, but they are fighting. They're a proud club. They're doing very well with the resources that they've got. They have made it clear that they are going to go for that top tier. You then have on the flip side of that a club like Watford FC, my club, a team that I've supported since I was a young boy, who are in the Premier League and have decided not to apply, not just not to apply for the top division, They've also decided not to go for the second division as well, and they've put an application in to drop down to the third tier of English football in the women's game over here, to the Premier League South. So it's a regional division. And I have written a pretty detailed piece on womenssoccerzone.com. So I don't want to talk too much about it because it will unfortunately make me angry, because this one is quite personal for me. But you look at a club like Yeovil, really trying their damnedest to scrape together whatever they can to ensure that they have an application that's worthy and that meets the criteria of the FA to be a professional club. And then you have a club like Watford who have all the resource, have Premier League money, the men's team have everything that they could possibly need to support a women's programme, and they decide against it. I'm interested in your take on that, mate, from an outsider looking in.
All you have to ask me, Kieran, and please just ask me, which club do I support on the men's side, and I'll give you my answer for that. Go ahead, try me.
I already know the answer to this, but maybe the listeners don't. Which club do you support, JJ?
I support Manchester United, and guess what? They don't even have a team on the women's side, I think, above the U16s. You said you weren't going to get mad. I'm going to go ahead and get a little angry for you. Any Premier League men's club that have finished above 14th place in the last 2 years, if you're telling me you don't have money to fund a women's program, there's got to be a change going on in your front office, because quite frankly, the amount of money that franchises make on jersey sales alone can probably fully fund a women's team. Because let's face it, Manchester United, their jersey are the most selling across the entire world. I'm pretty sure just the profits that they make on the United States alone can probably fund 11 players at minimum. That's beside the point. Premier League clubs, it should really be no excuse at this point. How much work the FA is doing to really try and promote the women's game and make it a real player, every club should at minimum in the Premier League have a team in that first or second division. I don't think there's any excuses. I mean, when you're telling me that Yeovil can put in their application to have a team in the top division, when you have a team like Bristol City, I mean, you know, this is, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think they have a men's side in the third division or fourth
second,
division.
Second. Bristol City playing the championship.
They're in the championship, but they've, you know, been bouncing around for a while, and they have a team that's in the top division, the women's side. There are literally no excuses. That's just lazy. That's just, I don't even want to go and say sexist, but, you know, people can take it for how they are. But, yeah, if you wanted to grab your popcorn and re-listen to that for the last couple of minutes, go ahead and do it. I have no problem putting myself in the line, but I think that it's quite frankly, if you make that much money, you can go ahead and fully fund a program with all the same resources that the men's team do.
Yeah,
end of line.
Yeah, I'd encourage people to read my article on Women's Soccer Zone. I think that will give you an insight into kind of Watford's history. They actually nearly fell into the third tier of women's football in England about 5 years ago, but managed to survive relegation in their last game. I don't want to criticise people too much. You know, for starters, I don't want people coming with legal cases for libel against us. But I think what needs to be said is that to balance this, and I have tried to be balanced in the article, the FA haven't given clubs an awful lot of time to put the plans in place. I've spoken to a lot of people over the last week, 10 days, since Watford made their decision not to apply for the top two divisions. And, you know, I think the FA notified clubs maybe in July that they were going to be doing this restructuring. The criteria was received beginning of September. It was made public end of September. And then clubs had until the 10th of November to put their applications in. Now, that's not giving clubs an awful lot of time to get their ducks in line. And for me, I think the FA, some of the criteria is unrealistic. I'm looking at attendances. The attendances expectation is a problem. Games are now started to be streamed on Facebook and on the BBC website. If you're a fan and you're watching on Facebook and it's freezing outside, you're going to take the Facebook option. I look at the fact that there are clubs not even playing in the cities that they are based. Reading, for example, JJ, I don't know if you know this, they play in Wickham, which is quite a distance away from Reading. So there are issues here, and there are some that believe the FA's decision has come too soon. I'm probably in that camp. I do want a professional league in England. I just think that maybe the idea is the right one, but the execution has maybe come a little bit too soon. Maybe another year for clubs to plan and get things in place might have encouraged a few more teams to come forward and apply. But I applaud teams like Yeovil. I applaud teams like Brighton, who have just come up to the Premier League in men's football. They have made it public today that they have put an application in, or they will be putting an application in, for top tier football. So there are clubs that are genuinely interested. From a personal perspective, hugely disappointing that Watford are not going to be one of them. I was involved in the initial WSL application process. I've made that clear in my article. So it's hugely disappointing to know that work that we did to get Watford into the WSL initially has essentially been wasted. You know, all that work that we put in has essentially been thrown back in our face, and that's disappointing. But I wish the players well at Watford. Keith Bonas, I've spoken to a few times. I don't know what his future is, the head coach. Disappointing to say the least. But we'll have a final break, JJ, and when we come back, we're going to have a talk about the USA's doubleheader against Canada.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So, JJ, USA against Canada, as you guys would say, a home-from-home tie for the two teams, a game in Vancouver and a game in San Jose. It was a draw in Vancouver and a victory for the US in San Jose. You saw both the games. They were very early on in the morning for me, so I've only seen highlights. So the floor is yours, my friend. I know you said that Canada were arguably the better team in the two games, but they came away without a victory.
Well, first off, it's home and home, not a home for home. If you're going to insult us, at least insult us correctly, Karen. Look, friendlies in non-FIFA windows, right? It's always going to make things a little bit interesting. Obviously, the U.S. and a good handful of the Canadian players, they play in the NWSL. So season's over. Squads are nearly full, I think. The Canadian team had a couple of players missing. U.S. had Crystal Dunn missing, amongst a couple of others. Canada, they looked inspired in that first match, obviously playing in Vancouver. That's, I would have to say, it's probably the home base for them. Looked good. Goal scored by Adriana Leone, finishing off a great little hoofed over the head cross from Christine Sinclair. The U.S. got the equalizer, or scored the early one first, and then in the second match put in a couple early. Alex Morgan looking good, Megan Rapinoe looking good. But I think, you know, again, this all comes down to, and we've had chats about this in the past, so we're not going to draw it out a whole lot here, but John Herdman knows how to build in rosters for these matches, knowing that you don't always need to have the first team in there. You can go ahead and experiment, and he does so bringing in Jordan Huitema, who's, you know, 16 years old, has had a handful of caps, and here you go, get tossed to the proverbial wolves, the quote-unquote best team in the world in the United States, and I think she handles her own. Janine Becky looked very good, scoring again for country in the second leg, which should come as no surprise to a lot of people because she's very good when she puts on the red of Canada. I think there are some positives and negatives to take, and I know, Kieran, you were a little bit vocal about some of the roster decision-makings and the lack thereof of players not playing in said matches for the United States.
Yeah, I'll do the positive thing first. When Canada released their press release after the second game, they announced that there were five teenagers in that lineup or in that squad that were involved in the game against the US, and I think John Herdman deserves a lot of credit for that, because as you say, it's a big ask to send those players in against the world ranked number one team. The negative for me is actually on the US side, and it's been kind of talked about on social media already. you have a situation where these are the two last games of the 2017 calendar for the US. They now have a break until January when they will go into camp. I think it's normally in Los Angeles. I was there when they were there at the start of this year. You have a situation where Emily Sonnet has not been called up for quite some time. She's had a tremendous season with the Portland Thorns. She gets a move to the W League to go and continue her season down in Sydney. She plays, what, two or three games, and then she's called into the squad for the two games against Canada. So in your mind, you're kind of thinking, good, you know, she's been recognised for the performances that she's had with Portland. On the flip side, you're kind of thinking, well, why have you waited for her to go all the way to Australia to call her up when you've had the chance all season? You then have the situation where you have four goalkeepers in the squad and only one of them has been used across the two games. That, for me, I don't understand. Sophia Huerta, I don't think, was used in the two games. She's just changed her federation citizenship or federation to from Mexico to the United States. I'm sure that would have happened anyway, regardless of what had happened over the last few games. But you have a roster of players in the last two games of the year. You, and I use the term quite openly on social media, and I stick with it. You drag Emily Sonnet from the other side of the world to be part of that roster, and then you don't play her. You call up four goalkeepers, and then three of them are sat on the bench. I don't understand that. And maybe you can shed some light, or maybe you can put a counter argument forward, mate, but I'm struggling with that one.
There's no counter argument for me, quite frankly. If Jill Ellis knows the team at this point that she's going to be bringing to World Cup qualifying, why bother calling in all these extra players? You know, like, not to say that, you know, you're going to rotate some out at times, but if you're right, it's a long flight from, you know, it was from Sydney to Vancouver for Emily Sonnet. I think our good friend Anna Dong has taken that trip once or twice before. And then not play her? Are you kidding me? Like, this, that's insane. I mean, if she makes that effort to get all the way out there, at least give her a cameo of 20 minutes in one match. I mean, yes, does training, you know, with the national team, that's always a big thing. You get assessed and coaches can give you updates and things to work on. That's all fine and good. But if you make the effort to get out there, you play. And how Alyssa Nair, and this is not a knock on Alyssa Nair, because I've said it before publicly and on social media that she should be the number one goalkeeper for the United States. Her form is very good. But why hasn't other players at least gotten half matches, or, you know, a half hour when you're beating Romania 6-0? This, I think, was last year, something like that. And why is she playing the 90 minutes? Same thing that happened when Hope Solo was playing, which is why I still felt that Nicole Barnhart, to this day, absolutely got robbed of any glory. I mean, she pretty much, I think it was two separate qualification occasions, one for the Olympics, one for the World Cup, where Barnhart was the number one keeper due to a Hope Solo injury. You get the team there, but then all of a sudden Hope comes back, and I don't mean to pick on Hope. This is just using it as an example. Hope gets laid out the red carpet and says, well, here's your number one jersey back. Go out and win us a tournament. Why not give it to the player that actually got you there? So this is a long-lying issue, Kieran, of favoritism that we've seen for quite a number of years amongst a number of nations. This comes at a friendly. There's been a lot of good players that had really good seasons for the NWSL clubs. Why not to say spoil their dreams, but really just say, okay, well, it doesn't really matter that much because we're just calling you in to fill some numbers. Enjoy your offseason.
What's disappointing. And I understand that there's also the element of, and I said it openly on social, these camps are more than just the matches. They are an opportunity to try new things and to keep tabs on players during the training sessions and the camp as a whole. But the Sonnet one's the one I can't understand. You know, to drag her all the way from Australia and this and not involve her at all, to bring four goalkeepers along and not involve them at all, that I don't understand. As I said, I didn't see the games. Did Chioma Ubagagu get any minutes?
To be honest, Kieran, I don't remember seeing Ubagagu on the field, nonetheless on the bench. You know, again, you asked me this, and I said at the top of the show whether You know, this has kind of been a long stretch for me. I did watch the matches, but the retaining portion of actually watching the matches kind of goes by the wayside a little bit. If she was on the field at some point, it wasn't a very memorable, you know, kind of noticeable few minutes. So I'm going to have to go ahead and say, no, I didn't see her on the field at all. Gazing up and downs, I don't even see her on the team sheets from the emails. So, yeah, again, it's just more players, again, that continue to befuddle me why they have such good club seasons, but they don't get rewarded. And, you know, how about this for one? You know, I know this is back home for you, but Mo Marley bringing opportunity to new players. We finally get to see Leah Williamson, who's been very good for Arsenal over the past this spring season, early goings in the regular league. So, you know, they got the right idea right now. Why can't that translate to the US?
Yeah, Leah Williamson and Kira Walsh called up to the England squad for two World Cup qualifiers against Bosnia and Herzegovina and Kazakhstan. We'll talk about those in the next show because those two games are due to take place in the next 10 days. I think we'll wrap up there, mate. We could rabbit on about the US and selection policies for quite some time, but I think it's probably best that we call it a day there. I know that you've got to dash off, so I will say thank you very much for giving me your time as always, pal.
Absolutely, looking forward to the next.
And thank you very much to listeners. As always, you can contact us on Twitter. We're on at WosoZone. You can listen to the show on iTunes or at womenssoccerzone.com. Do check out womenssoccerzone.com for articles, for columns, and for other features that will be going up over the next week or two. Thanks as always for tuning in. Take care of yourselves and bye-bye.